Hello and welcome to the Scottish Football Show. Coming up, Motherwell madness. Days before the new season begins, Graham Alexander waves sayonara after a European horror show. Jota jinks his way into goal of the season contendership as the champions dump Dons. We're going to round up the lower divisions with Football Scotland journalist Ewan Booth-Robertson as well. And finally, a new season brings glorious new kits in action. Craig McFarlane from Football Kit Memories gives us the lowdown on the best and worst new strips. Yes, hello, I'm your host, Andrew Slavin, and joining me in our lovely digital studio on my digital left is West Ham United media production guru, Laura Brannan.
Hello.
Hello. And on my digital right is football filmmaker and beautiful editor, Finlay Marks. Hello, Finn.
Hello.
I hope you enjoyed your intros today. The football season's back and it's absolutely class. I had a great weekend, but let's start just quickly. One particular highlight from each of you, if you have one. Finn, you go first.
My highlight is actually something south of the border. It was Bobby Madden's first game as a professional referee in England. Two red cards and booed off by both sets of fans. It's lovely to see he's taking his form from Scotland down south. So that was a huge highlight for me this weekend. But it's just so good to have the football back though, isn't it? Like I was sitting there watching the games over the weekend and just like, oh, I've missed this so much. And then like all the rubbish and the ranting and everything on Twitter straight away, just, oh, inject it into my veins, man.
Laura, you got any highlights?
For me, it was probably Dundee. I don't know if this was just a really bad troll or they're just not very competent, but the official match day tickets said it was Dundee versus Patrick Thistle. So that's a new one. Yeah, they deserve to lose that game, I think, based on that.
We'll probably hear more about that from Ewan Booth-Robertson later on. I enjoyed the weekend. I wouldn't slightly inject a 4-1 defeat for Queen of the South into my veins, Finn, but there you go. Football has its ups and downs.
Keena now looks for Mata. This could be the crowning moment for Max Mata. That finishes it. Sligo Rovers will be heading into the third round of European competition for the first time and hammers home Motherwell's embarrassment.
Yes, a 3-0 aggregate defeat in the European Conference qualifiers was an embarrassment too far for Motherwell. Graham Alexander waved cheerio the very next day, bringing to an end his 18-month spell in the dugout. Since the turn of the year, Motherwell had won just 5 of 23 matches under Alexander. And Laura, as someone who must know Graham quite well in the time that he was there, you were there at the same time, what was he like as a manager or a coach?
Yeah, it's kind of a difficult time I think the club has had over the last kind of 7 days, even 2 weeks as well if you want to count the first leg of the European tie against Sligo. It's not been great, has it? As you're saying, a wee bit of a shock in terms of the timing of the season. But on the flip side of that, it is just 5 wins out of 23. It is only 3 league games, league wins since the turn of the year, since Boxing Day. This is a man that has been under a lot of pressure. The fans haven't been happy for a while. I think many assumed it was going to happen a lot sooner than this. And he bought time by squeezing into the top six with literally the last head of the ball, and again bought more time by clinching Europe with the second last game of the season. But these proved to be kind of just plasters in the end and didn't really solve any long-term problems. As a man, Graham Alexander, like he came in a year and a half ago, and he wanted to do things his way when he came in. Very, very headstrong in that sense. Came in with a plan, and I think some of that maybe came from his experiences at Salford, where he was told what to do a lot of the time by that the class of 92 essentially, and didn't have the kind of the same freedoms as he would have liked. So he took it upon himself to really kind of stick to his principles, be very clear on what he wanted and what he didn't want. And yeah, like he's as a man, he's quite reserved. He does keep himself to himself, but he is very kind of headstrong, as I say, in what he wants. But I think in turn that can also lead to him kind of maybe overthinking a few things as well, and that maybe comes to his detriment sometimes, because some things maybe manifest more than others because he's thinking things through too much. It just didn't really work out. It wasn't really. He came in, he had a very strong start. Well, it's a strong start to last season, so that was kind of 6 months into his job. Really, really good start, where he picked up the points that essentially got Motherwell into Europe, because it wasn't the second half of the season, but it really just was a kind of downward spiral from January onwards, and he's just never recovered from it.
The assistant manager has gone as well, Chris Lucchetti. Do you think more will follow out the club? Was there a feeling that there was something not quite right, even during the summer?
Like, I mean, I can't say who's going to leave next and stuff, but what I can say is that he made a lot of his own appointments in the job. So what previously happened before would be a straightforward hiring process of applicants and people that didn't know the manager. Maybe like when Stephen Robinson came in, Mo Ross was appointed, Darren O'Day was appointed, Craig Hinchcliffe as well came in as goalie coach. And they didn't know each other. There wasn't a previous relationship there. So it meant when Stephen Robinson then left the role, these guys stayed in the job. And that, time will tell, but that might not be the case now, because Graham Alexander brought in so many of his own men.
Liam Kelly had some words to say after the Sligo match. Quote marks here. I think that is part of the reason the manager's decided to move on. Fan anger, he's talking about. The manager felt the toxicity levels towards him weren't fair on us as players and him and his family. It wasn't beneficial to anyone. Is that fair, or is it unfair to kind of put that on the fans when they see what they're seeing on the pitch?
Yeah, I think what kind of the quote just after this, I kind of took umbrage to a wee bit when he went on to say, when they scored so early, the mood was so negative, we need supporters to pull us, to guide us through the game. Look, I can see where he's coming from there, but to me, it's not really the fans, it's not up to them to guide you through the game. To me, that's the manager's job. Maybe when you're maybe 1-0 up with 10 minutes to go and you're kind of holding on, the fans can guide you through and they are the 12th man. And by no means, like the beauty of Scottish football compared to English football is the fans don't sit back and wait to be entertained the same way. And fans do get involved in that, and that's great. But it's not on the fans when you're already 1-0 down from the first leg and then you concede so early on in the second leg in a game and a trip that the fans have built up to for so long. I mean, you've got to remember that the last time Motherwell got into Europe, the fans didn't get to go to the away games, and there was three big trips that they missed out on because of COVID. So this has been a long time coming for the fans to really embrace a European tour, and it was something everyone was really looking forward to. So to have that snatched away literally 5 minutes into the game over in Ireland, you can't really fault the fans for not being in high spirits and in a negative mood, and not being their usual buoyant, colourful self. Every set of fans will go through these emotions at some point over a season, and it boils down to complete frustration that these are these people put their heart and soul into supporting this team, and they spend so much money on it, and their week revolves around this, and the emotions are so high. And when you've watched three league wins since Christmas, you've got to understand the way they're feeling.
Look, on a wider note, I have to say it was a pretty short-lived trip. I know it was only one game, but Motherwell fans only had to travel less than 600 miles round trip. It was not exactly exotic. But Finn, this isn't just a bad result for Motherwell. It's a pretty dire one for Scottish football. But is it as bad as maybe I'm making out?
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I think when you look at some of the stats around it, this is the first time Sligo Rovers have ever won both legs of a European tie. The club have only ever won 6 matches in European competition in their history, and that's inclusive of the 2 wins against Motherwell. So that means that 20% of Sligo Rovers' European wins are against Motherwell. And also, just for context, 4 years ago, Motherwell Colts, like the B team, beat Sligo Rovers 2-0 to reach the quarterfinals of the Iron Brew Cup. So it's pretty devastating and damning, but this kind of happens every season. Remembering back a few seasons ago to when Kelly were knocked out by Konski Nomad, the Welsh side, who I think would be a similar level, if not slightly above, where Sligo Rovers are. And, you know, everybody had a good laugh with the classic, you know, booked up for Belgrade and everything. Like, it just, it was a given that they should get through. And I think it should be a given. I think Motherwell should have expected, certainly over two legs, to have gone through in this tie. And it's quite damning that they haven't. I think the biggest issue that a lot of Scottish teams have, and this is actually something that Laura was talking about last week when we were discussing the home leg defeat, is a failure to prepare. And I don't necessarily mean in terms of fitness or anything, although match sharpness can be an issue with these games coming so early into the season. But I think it's more about adapting to a different style of football. And I'll talk about this in a more general sense, because Sligo Rovers and Konski Nomads play very much a style of football similar to what Motherwell would be used to, in that, you know, it's British Isles, it's a British style of football or an Irish style of football. They're very similar. And once you get onto the continent, it's a completely different ballgame, almost literally. But I think even out with that, there has to be a way of knowing how to play domestically, which I think a lot of these teams have figured out how to do in Scotland, because I think the way that, and the style of football predominantly that we play in Scotland, is exceptionally different from the way that most other countries in Europe will play. You know, there's all the cliches about like long ball and kick and rush and all that kind of thing, but it's a stereotype born out of the truth. Like, the way that Scottish football tends to be played is completely different, that you're not used to playing hugely technical sides that will be well-versed and well-drilled from a tactical point of view, much more so than the level of opposition in Scotland. So I think that's the big thing. But it's a bit of a vicious circle, because I think you only get the ability to grow and to learn from these things by being exposed to them. So you just hope that by more exposure, and what I hope is that with an increased coefficient, that enough of the clubs can do enough consistently in order to allow group stage football to be a regular thing for teams in Scottish football, whether that's, you know, obviously Rangers and Celtic will probably be there or thereabouts all the time, but clubs like Hearts, Motherwell, Aberdeen, Hibs, Dundee United, and, you know, teams that will get an opportunity to go into these situations, like a St Johnstone if they win a cup or something like that. It's going in, and I think mentally as well, having that switch in your mind not to go in as the underdogs, because I think that's a really Scottish thing to do, but to go in and be like, we're here on merit, and we're here to play our style of play, and going in with that kind of attitude, I think that would be something that hopefully would lead to teams having a bit more success in that arena.
I totally agree with you, but I think seeing this result, seeing the defeat, it definitely just tells you the story that Motherwell, under Graham Alexander, they were not, obviously they're not ready. But if they're not ready now, then they're not going to be ready for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
So my initial take was, this is crazy. It's a couple of days before the end of the season. You got to give Graham a bit more time. But really dissecting all of this, it's madness that it even got to this stage when the warning signals were there before the summer. An opportunity for Alexander to build and show Motherwell fans that he can get Motherwell to play a brand of football that they will enjoy and pay their money, when everyone's, you know, pockets are already tight, to go and see their team and be proud of their team. I think it makes sense that he's gone. I think it makes sense that it shows some leadership that they will do the decision now. And it looks like Stephen Hamill has got an opportunity after taking the team on Saturday. And we're going to talk about some more positivity about Motherwell as we get into our SPFL roundup just after this.
Football, bloody hell.
Excellent news, everyone. It's the SPFL roundup that we're going to do for you now. It is back. Plenty of football to talk about. We'll start where everything kicked off for the new Premiership season. A win for Rangers, but not an easy win. Finn, you can round this one up surely for us. Not an easy start.
It wasn't an easy start, and I think the whole match was a bit of a microcosm for Rangers last season. The whole first half just felt like a bit of a hangover from the Steven Gerrard era. It was infinite possession. There were about 147,000 crosses in the first half with utterly no end product whatsoever. And Livy had set up so brilliantly. They were quite happy to let Rangers just have possession, have possession, have possession, and Rangers just had no way around it. I think you're saying Rangers had more bookings in the first half than Antonio Colak had touches. So something needed to change, but as Giovanni Van Bronckhorst has been shown to be very adept at doing, he did make those changes, and Rangers were a completely different side after half time. The tactical changes that he made, he took off John Souter, who in terms of debuts had a very poor one. I think he will come good, but I just think he needs a wee bit of adjustment to playing that left centre back side.
He really showed the lack of physical dominance that he has, because Joe Nubley just got past him to open the scoring. Honestly, it was like knife through butter. And this is a guy, Joe Nubley, who is a fairly nomadic life in the English lower leagues. Mm-hmm. But he made Souter look like a League One Scottish player. It was a great finish for him, to be fair.
It was a fantastic goal. And again, it was a brilliantly worked set piece by Livy. The goalkeeper's kick out to the side, Devlin's flick on. It was a bit of a comedy of errors at the back. I think Barisic and Souter and McLaughlin probably should have all done better. But it was exactly what Livy's industry and tightness and hard work, I think, deserved in that first half. The second half, though, I think Malik Tillman coming on that really made a difference. The way that he was able to find the space in the second half actually helped free up then as well other players. Ryan Kent was doubled up in the first half and just didn't do anything, but he was much better in the second half. Crossed in for Colak's goal. It was incorrectly disallowed for offside. It also set up Arfield for the equaliser. And James Tavernier as well, grabbing the winner, as he so often tends to do. It's some ridiculous stats about James Tavernier and his goal scoring and his assisting ability at Rangers. Since the start of the 26-17 season, he's been directly involved in 103 goals in 204 appearances. Jesus. In the Scottish Premiership. So that's 48 goals and 55 assists, 14 more than any other player. And just in terms of his league goals, he's actually just two goals short of Mark Hatley's league goal tally for Rangers of 86. So he just continues to do, as David Martindale said, Tav does what Tav does.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of Rangers fans will just be happy with the win, but surely Livingston fans will be quite content with the way that they played and how much they limited Rangers. And I say limited, I know they didn't have less of the ball, but Livingston always seem, under David Martindale, to be comfortable when they have the ball in front of them, and they dealt with numerous crosses. I think Livingston could do okay again this season. But as for the champions, Celtic, a fairly comfortable performance, and Diogo Jota with an absolute perler to make it 2-0. For Celtic. What did you guys think of that?
Yeah, this is a beautiful one. Was it maybe 30 yards, are we saying? What was it recorded as officially? It's outside the box anyway.
Well spotted.
Yeah, that's my mathematical judgment there. it was decent, it was outside the box. Into the top corner. Absolutely beautiful. What a way to start the season. If all the contenders are going to be of that high calibre, we are in for a good year. No problems with having contenders in the first day of the season. We've got contender for save of the season already as well, with Liam Kelly pulling off
two
an absolute
saves.
Wonder save. That's what I was going to say. Two wonder saves. The fact that we're just talking about one, but there's actually two. I mean, this boy, I don't know if you've ever heard me say this before, but he's going to be Scotland's next number one. There's absolutely no debating it. He absolutely is. So, yeah, you've got two big moments already you're talking about. Jota, no surprise to anyone, he's came in absolutely flying from the start. He's picked up where he left off last season. And Liam Kelly, exactly the same, picked up where he's left off last season. Motherwell won that game because of him. It's absolutely fantastic from him.
The two Hearts goals as well, for me, honestly, would be maybe not quite goal of the season, but definitely goal of the month contenders. The movement for Forest goal The first one for Hearts was absolutely delightful. It was fantastic one-touch football. And the Barry Mackay goal as well. Did you guys see this? The way that he
first
brings
touch.
It down. The first touch and then the second touch just to nudge it away from the incoming defender. He kind of sends three defenders for a hot dog all at once and then just rolls it past the goalkeeper. It was absolutely beautiful. And we almost had a hat-trick of fantastic goals in that game because Awura Edwards hit the bar from miles out for Ross County as well, so it was a shame that one didn't go in as well.
This kid, Awura Edwards, Malky Mackay just has this kind of knack of having a good knowledge of decent players down in England, but this, he seems to have found himself a gem in Edwards. 21 on loan from Bristol City, hasn't played too much full-time football, but he was an absolute demon in that first half. He's one I'm really going to watch this season. Opening day wins for Hibs, and Motherwell start with Hibs here. Not a great game. Two massive incidents in this game that kind of overshadowed all the football. The red card for Murray Davidson and the red card for the Hibs fullback Cabraja. What do you think of this, Finn? Because a lot of people have said that the Cabraja one is worse. I don't know, I must be seeing something totally different because I think Murray Davidson's is worse. And I'll explain why right now, because I think both go in at the same amount of pace and ferocity and aggression, and I think that in itself merits a red card. But Davidson's so high on the knee that I think compared to Cabraja's, he looks more controlled. And I know that's up for debate and people can interpret it differently, but that's just how I interpret it.
I think they were both reckless, wild challenges.
That's
fair. I actually agreed with Callum Davidson for what he said after the match, which is they're either both yellows or they're both reds. And I think I agree with that because I think if you're going to, it's about consistency. I think they're both reckless. I think they're both really poorly timed and they had the potential to be really dangerous challenges. So if you set the precedent with Murray Davidson, which I think is the right call to give the red card. And I kind of see what you mean about the Cabraja challenge potentially not being as wild as Murray Davidson's, but I think it's closer to that than it is a booking. And I think because of the precedent he'd set with Murray Davidson, he should have been sending off both players.
That's a very good point, to be fair. So I'll side with Lee Johnson and say I think it was a yellow and a half.
An orange card.
Kenny Miller said that on Sportscene. Motherwell must be delighted to just see 3 points on the board. A penalty, albeit Kevin Van Veen dispatching it quite expertly. He was Motherwell's top goal scorer last season. And you'd probably think he's going to do the same again, Laura, because there's not a lot of options up front.
Yeah, that's one of the complaints fans have had is the lack of recruitment when it comes to a striker. so, yeah, who else is going to do it but Kevin Van Veen, of course.
And you have to say his full name as well. Kevin Van Veen.
Of course, that's what happens with Dutch boys. This is a big win for Motherwell, obviously. It's been, as I say earlier, it was a tough week for them. I think you could see the emotion, especially from Liam Kelly, wearing the captain's armband, the rallying call to the players. You could just kind of see it full time, just what it meant to him, what it meant to Stephen Hamill as well. Like, this is a boy that has Motherwell through his blood. He's a club legend, and for him to take on this role, even if it is just on an interim basis, it's massive for him. And to go in there and have that impact immediately, it'll be a huge weight off his shoulders as well, getting that first one, because we don't know how long he'll be in the role for. And what I also kind of liked was the fact that, aside from the actual football, he was giving youth a chance. Young Keen Spears coming on and making his debut was really, really good, considering, I mean, like, this is something that's right into the Motherwell philosophy of the club's values, is to blood through the youth from the academy. So for somebody who's obviously the head of the youth academy in general, to know the younger boys that have now came through at professional level and are at that youth level just below the first team, he obviously knows them inside out. So for him to just come in instantly and know who's ready to make that step into the first team. It was great to see him. Ewan Wilson as well on the bench. Mark Ferry's just turned 16, to get his chance on the bench as well. That is something that if Stephen Hamill is in this job long term, I think you'll see an awful lot of over the coming months, to see these boys getting bloodied through more often.
Finally, wrapping all of this up, Kilmarnock and Dundee United with a beautiful Scottish draw. Finn, what did you make of this one? Because we said it in the last podcast, yeah, but Stephen Fletcher, he can play some silky stuff, man.
His hold-up play is absolutely excellent. We mentioned this last week, and the back heel to set up Dylan Levitt is fantastic. And it's not just one of those things which is, I'm just going to play a cute move here and maybe it'll come off. He absolutely knows how to play it properly, which is he's running across the box to give enough space behind him for Levitt to run into, and then he just rolls the ball behind him into Levitt's path, and it's a terrific finish as well. I thought it was an absolutely stunning goal, absolutely lovely. But also as well, Ash Taylor's smashing in a volley. There's something about a centre-back just smashing home a close-range kind of volley or half-volley that I just... Oh, it's beautiful.
Announcing his return to the Scottish Premiership in true Fridge Freezer style. Yeah. Just absolutely lamping his right foot at it. You mentioned Dylan Levitt. I think this is a really interesting character who's left Man United, kind of forced a move out of United to come back to Dundee United. Fans player of the year last season, such an interesting character. I think he's really utilised the loan last season to give him that flavour of first team football, and he's decided he wants more of that. He's willing to take a step aside to really have a crack at Dundee United again, to probably force his way into the Wales equation if they can qualify for the World Cup. Or did they qualify? They did qualify for the World Cup. Apologies. What a player, by the way. I really like the look of him. And another decent player that Dundee United have obviously signed just on Monday, Glenn Middleton, Finn.
Yeah, I think it's a really good signing for all involved. I don't think it was a massive shock to think that he's not going to break through at Rangers into the full first team. He's been away at St Johnstone the last little while, and you picked up a couple of winners' medals there. So he's a really good player. I think he's a really good young guy as well. And this is the kind of time for him to really knuckle down and get into establishing himself as a first team player at another club. I think it's a great signing for Dundee United. Just going back to what you're saying about Dylan Levitt as well, I think it shows, I think, the level-headedness of the player as well. Mm-hmm. I think some players could see coming from a youth academy as revered as the Manchester United one, you could see, and you do see, a lot of players with coming through with a certain level of entitlement and thinking that they're better than, you know, a certain level of playing football. But I think when you see a player that has gone to a club on loan, it's worked out brilliantly for him and the club, and he just feels really comfortable there. I think the fact that he's then pursued going back to that club is a really good sign, and I think it shows a level of maturity to him. He's only 21 years old, wanting to really get on with his career in earnest now. And I think that is a terrific signing, an amazing bit of business by Dundee United to bring him in permanently as well.
You think I'm going to answer a stupid question like that?
It wasn't just the Scottish Premiership taking flight at the weekend. The Championship, League One and Two took off as well. And opening day victories for new boys on the block, Bonnyrigg Rose and Cove Rangers, enjoyed their first win in their first ever game at Championship level. But Kelty Hearts found the step up to League One a rude awakening. All of those results oddly ended 2-0. But to help break down the lower divisions, we're joined by Football Scotland journalist Ewan Booth-Robertson. Ewan, how have you found the start of the Scottish Professional Football League season?
It's been brilliant, and the lower leagues has kind of had everything that makes it so great. From a purely personal point of view, my team, you know, went up to Dundee and got a fantastic result up there against the favourites for the league, so it's even more pressure on Dundee now, so it'll be interesting to see if they can cope with the increasing pressure on their title.
But we'll talk to me about the Championship. Before you break my heart about Queen's chances getting back to the Championship the first time asking, what are some of the big stories from the second tier?
Yeah, well, the biggest story is probably Thistle's win over Dundee. You know, two of the favourites for the title. Dundee came down last season. There's obviously a little bit of animosity between the clubs. I don't know if you've seen the infamous flag the Thistle fans have. It's the Thistle badge just from far in Hearts. That's something along the lines of we'll never forget, which it's quite funny, albeit a little bit tongue-in-cheek. It's not too serious, but there's also a bit of animosity there. And, you know, Thistle went 3 goals up without having had one set and a half in the squad due to injuries. So I think they scored from 2 set pieces. So that was a big win as well. You look at the clubs who I think will be up there, Inverness and Arbroath, you know, both drop points. Can't believe I'm saying that after week one. But, you know, these things are important. So, yeah, that was the big result. And also, I think, like you touched on, Cove Rangers, first ever game in the Scottish Championship. And it's interesting that Mitch Megginson got 2 goals there because, you know, he scored goals at every level. So I think the question mark going into the season was, can he do it at a higher level? Mm-hmm. You know, 2 goals in the first game week, it's pretty impressive.
I've got a little question just about Arbroath, because they came so close last season to doing something incredible. And I think pretty much everybody in the country, apart from Kilmarnock fans, were kind of willing Arbroath to get over the line if Dick Campbell could take them up. Do you think they've got a chance of going the distance again this season?
I think we'll be around it. I think we'll be in the top 4. I think that'll be the target. And then, you remember Campbell last season, I think they were like second in the league or top of the league, and there was like 6 games to go, and he kept saying, oh, that's just avoided relegation now, so I'm happy. So, you know, I don't think he's going to get too ahead of himself. But they've got a good squad. Everyone kind of talks about Campbell and, you know, a great manager and whatnot, but they've got good players. You know, it's interesting, actually, the whole part-time dynamic at that level, because people say that's kind of look at it as like a negative. It'll work against teams, the fact they're part-time, not full-time, but mm-hmm. You know, more and more these days, I think it actually maybe even is a benefit to some clubs, because, you know, a lot of players will pursue a career outside of football and they'd rather work full time and then pick up a bit of extra money playing part-time football. So there's loads of good players that they'd rather be part-time. So it's interesting, you see the finances, and I think Morton and Hamilton recently came out and said that, you know, their costs of running the football club have went through the roof. Season ticket sales aren't great. I think you might see more clubs going part-time, which is, I think, that's something to keep an eye on.
Looking down to League One, I mean, Queen of the South. Sorry,
don't,
Andrew.
Laura. Come on.
Straight down last year, and right away they're propping up the League One table all of a sudden. I mean, what's happening here? Is there any turning point for them?
Andrew probably knows more than me, because I thought they'd win on Saturday. You know, I looked at the fixture, as like Clyde, who again I've tipped to get relegated in League One. I thought they'd win. They had a good Premier Sports Cup campaign, you know. So I thought they looked strong. I like Rory Payton, I think he's an excellent player. Have you watched him with me? But Harry Cochrane, Andrew, like, is he good?
I mean, he played a lot last season as well. The thing I really like about Cochrane is and one thing I noticed since Gibson's taken charge and had this summer to try and rebuild and mould a team the way he wants it, is I noticed that we seem to play a lot of football on the deck a lot more. There's a lot less like long balls and stuff. And I think Rory Payton seems to hit the channel so well. He's so quick. But a really important signing, I thought, bringing back to Palmerston was Ian Wilson. I really like him in the middle for Queen of the South. And I just think we were so bitterly bad at home last season. And to see us take the lead within a few minutes and then throw it away so disastrously, it gives me... When I had hope after the game against St Johnstone, which was at, I'm nervous. You got to win your first home game of the season, which is the opening day, and you don't win it. It worries me, if I'm honest. But you're here to give me some hope here, Ewan.
Genuinely, the thing with League One, I think of all the leagues this season, I think it's the most competitive league in Scotland. You look at the table and you know, it's difficult to predict a game. I was thinking about putting a coupon on Saturday. I was looking down the Scottish games. I was like, there's no point. You couldn't predict anything. It's so competitive. You've got, I thought Queens would be good. I'm interested to see how Airdrie will be. Ian Murray's obviously left, who I rated quite highly. I think he's got a tough job at Raith Rovers, to be honest, with their squad. But, you know, they've got Reece McCabe as a manager, who I think is 32, 33, mm-hmm. Which is crazy. So their assistant manager is also Callum Fordyce. So they both play. So, you know, you've got your manager and assistant playing. I don't like, personally, I've never really been a fan of the whole player-manager sort of thing. I don't think it really works.
Same at Queens.
Exactly, because if you're a player and say a manager's not playing well and he's picking himself, you know, it's gonna cause problems in the dressing room. But they've started well, Airdrie. It's a good result for them. I think Peter Head will be down near the bottom, if I'm honest. And an interesting one for me is Rory McAllister, who's signed for people who don't know. He was at Cove Rangers. He's a goal machine for the last forever, it seems like. A player who, as we touched on earlier, could easily have had a full-time career, but you know, has a job outside of football, so he never pursued that. But he got transfer listed by Cove because he booked a holiday for during the season, and he was going to miss their game against Dundee. So Cove went, nope, we can't be having that, and punted them to Montrose, which is just brilliant Scottish football, isn't it? You know, player books holiday midway through the season.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. I love that. Let's look at League Two, because really lovely story to see Bonnyrigg Rose come up and they win. How do you think they will fare coming up to the SPFL?
I think we'll be competitive. It's great to see these stories, isn't it? I think it's a really interesting season, actually, in terms of looking at all the clubs that have came through the pyramid. So you've got Cove, who've obviously been promoted last season. You've got Queen's Park, who've had back-to-back promotions. You've had Celtic Hearts in League One. I'm very interested to see, maybe I'm probably the only person in the world that thinks this, but to see where their level is, you know, where's their ceiling for those football clubs? You know, I look at Celtic, can they go to the Championship? I look at Cove, can Cove become a Premiership club? Gretna's obviously the famous example, isn't it? Albeit that ended in complete disaster, but, you know, they progress through the league. So I'm interested to see how all these clubs do. I think Bonnyrigg will be, I think they'll be pretty competitive in that league. And I think what you're going to see now for the next 5-10 seasons is whoever finishes bottom of League Two is going down in the playoff every season, because I think the quality at the top end of the lower league is much higher than the bottom end of League Two now.
It's really got to be something, Ewan, for the standard of the game in general. But when you do have these clubs that are ambitious and have aspirations of getting to a higher level that previously the league system prohibited them from doing, and we're seeing teams like you're saying, like Cove Rangers and Queen's Park, who've gone pro, you know, pushing up through the divisions to get to a level. From the flip side, it's a bit of a shame because, you know, you do have some old historic clubs that have dropped out the league system, you know, like Berwick Rangers or something, that will they ever have the resources to get back into the SPFL? But it's surely a good thing just for the overall standard and level of the game in the lower leagues when you do have that level of jeopardy for the clubs that have been there for a long time to get their act together to face these new sides coming up who are hungry for success.
Yeah, it's a great point. And on the flip side, it is kind of sad to see like Cowdenbeath go down, you know, iconic ground. And you know what you said is completely true. Like, I don't think these clubs will be back. I generally don't. If you look at even the West of Scotland League now, you get teams like Auchinleck and stuff coming through, you know, real ambitious clubs. And I'm kind of torn because it's football, isn't it? We all talk about the romance of the game, but if you're being brutally honest, it's the teams that have the most money who tend to be up there at the end of the season winning trophies. Look at Scotland, it's, you know, Rangers and Celtic. You know, France, it's PSG. You know, Germany, it's Bayern Munich. It's just the way it is. So I'd like to open the path up a little bit more. I think it's kind of ridiculous that a team that wins the league has to play a playoff to go up. If you finish bottom of League Two, I think you should go down automatically. But I mean, I could be here all day talking about the SPFL and their rules when it comes to promotion and relegation, you know, for the fact that just talking about the Championship, the team that finishes second bottom of the Premiership has to play, you know, one game, whereas the teams in the Championship have to play three. And it's like six games in like 18 days. It's utterly ridiculous. But, you know, listen, if they do a great job, the SPFL, I won't say anything else, I'll be getting a call in the morning probably. I think they should open the pathway up, definitely. It's good to see these clubs, because some clubs in there with great support. I'd love to see Auchinleck in the leagues, just from a personal point of view, because it's such a big club, they've got a great support.
Utterly ridiculous is a phrase that's used often in Scottish football for a good reason and a lot of the time a bad reason. So that's a good way to end, you, an absolute legend, man.
The dogs bark and the caravan passes. The caravan keeps moving. The caravan keeps going.
Everyone loves a football kit. I'm currently wearing my Queen of the South Centenary kit. It's an absolute belter. But joining us to talk about all these glorious football tops is Craig McFarlane from Football Kit Memories. Hello, Craig. How are things?
How are we doing, guys? Very well. Thanks so much for the invite. Really excited to chat.
Anyone listening to this right now can't see you right now, Craig, but you're wearing Motherwell's football top, which Laura Brannan must be fairly delighted about.
It's a nice one, isn't it? It's a good one.
It's a classic. I think this season and the away one this season as well, where they had that kind of Sampdoria style away one, absolutely beautiful. I've got both.
Amazing. Well, let's open this up to the group. What makes a good kit, Craig? And apologies if you can hear my dog crying in the background.
Oh dear, I hope none of this year's kits made him cry. But I think for me, I think it's all about kind of history and tradition, right? And I think it's about interpreting that in a new kind of modern way in terms of design, I think. But for me, like, it's a big thing. You always want your club to keep, you know, what's been worn in the past and make sure that any nods to history, like I love a centenary shirt. I love, you know, a star above a badge or a couple of stars above the badge like Aberdeen have got and stuff like that. I love all that stuff. I'm a sucker for it. So that's what's important for me, really.
So what about Laura, Finn, what kits are you loving this season as well?
I mean, let's start at the very beginning. Aberdeen, they've gone kind of like that retro way that you were talking about, Craig, with a kind of nod to the cup-winning cup season kits with a really smart pinstripe with the red with a very narrow white pinstripe on it. And they're also doing something which I absolutely love in kits, which is where the away kit is effectively just an inversion of the home kit. And the away kit is the white with a very narrow red pinstripe on it. I think that's a pretty good place to start. I really like that one.
Oh, pinstripes. Probably the most hated thing I could pick out of any kit. I just don't think I've ever liked a kit ever with pinstripes on them. So Aberdeen have not just done it once, but it's a double. It's even worse this year.
Dear, oh dear. I really like it. I have to say I really like it. And I like that kind of nod to history too. Do you remember that Scotland shirt that had pinstripes on it in the 2000s?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Kevin Kyle. Stephen Thompson, Kevin Kyle. Oh, dear. There's some bad memories from that kit, isn't there?
Yeah. I love the shirt, though.
I think that's one of the really wonderful things about the kits, especially anything that's got a nod to the history like you were talking about, Craig, is this kind of, for good or for bad, you can actually remember certain players in a kit. You know, you can just see a kit and you just think, like you're saying, Laura, it's like Kevin Kyle playing for Scotland, which is not a brilliant memory, but they can just conjure up these kind of immediate memories.
Yeah, there's quite a few like ones based in historic kits this year, isn't there? Not just Aberdeen. Obviously, Motherwell's home kit is based on the 1982 home kit, which is kind of it's a kind of almost Ajax look to it, where the colours are almost reversed this year, so it's predominantly claret instead of amber. So it was actually quite funny when we did the home kit launch for that kit. One of the players came in to do the video, and his immediate reaction was, "Oh, is this the away kit?" And it was so genuine because he thought that it was the away kit and it didn't look like a home kit on first viewing. So it's a wee bit different. There's also ones, there's Rangers have based a couple of their kits this year on retro ones. Obviously Celtics as well, based on one from the 90s. So it's kind of a theme that's going around this season, isn't it?
Yeah, you're Dundee United as well, isn't it? The kind of the DUFC badge and the kind of floppy collar. Isn't that the year they won the league title as well?
I'm a big fan of the Dundee United one. I think it's really smart and clean. It's straight to the point. It's all just tangerine with a nice simple black collar. And it's quite funny because Dundee United went to all this effort of revitalising their badge again. Not changing it dramatically, but just fixing it up, fixing the inconsistencies, and going to this length to then not even put it on their kit.
That's a really good point.
But I do like that the alternative badge. I think it looks really smart on this strip. It's just so clean and simple.
Yeah.
Craig, what do you make of the elaborate kit launches that clubs do now? Are you kind of a fan of the sexy videos, or do you just want to see the kit? Make it simple.
I'm absolutely a fan of the sexy videos. And just to be clear, that is around the kits. I think for me, yeah, I think if you're going to justify doing three new shirts every year, you're going to want like a bit of anticipation and excitement around it. And I think it's just a way for clubs to be like really creative, you know. Yeah, I'm all for that stuff. What about you guys?
I mean, from a club perspective, having to be a producer and come up with these ideas, I hate it because to be original every year. But as a fan, I enjoy seeing it. I mean, like, you look at St Mirren's, it was so unusual this year to see St Mirren go all out and actually be quite adventurous. I mean, they had a nightclub in their concourse. and the strip went down really well as well. I personally, I'm not a huge fan of it. I'm just not a huge fan of that paisley design in general, never mind on a kit, but I can see why it is going to be quite a popular one and almost like one of these kind of cult kits. Down the years, it will always be a fan's favourite.
So I think one of the worst things that you can do at football clubs is ask your players to act.
Oh,
and that St Mirren spot was yes, it was adventurous and pretty funny and cool, and it they nailed it. And I'm not slagging the acting in any way. It's just so funny and awkward.
I am right there with you from experience. Never get a footballer to act or read a script. It is like asking a dog to perform tricks. It's just not, you just don't do it. It's just not worth it.
I don't think I'm the only one that is on tenterhooks for the Celtic Christmas video every year, just to see how they've stepped up their game every year, which is absolutely brilliant. Just in terms of the actual kits that have come out this season, though, I think that one, the St Mirren one, is the one for me. The Paisley pattern's an interesting one, but it's so unique to Paisley, and I just think it's something that's wonderful that they've amalgamated a part of the culture of the town,
yeah,
putting that onto the kit.
Absolutely.
One of the other kits that really stood out to me in the lower divisions as well, have you guys seen the Falkirk home kit this season? It's a Puma kit, and it's quite simple, quite classy. It's that, you know, slightly, almost just off black, dark navy, classic Falkirk colours.
Oh, yeah.
But for me, what absolutely sets it off is the fantastic sponsor across the shirt, which is crunchycarrots.co.uk.
That is amazing.
It's a remarkable how a sponsor can really make or break a kit, isn't it?
Craig, that's amazing. I really enjoyed that. It was quite good fun looking across all those kits and some, yeah, quite a colourful segment, shall we say. But thanks so much for your time,
thanks,
mate.
Craig,
I really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
That is it from us for another week. Thanks so much for listening. Laura, Finn, you've been wonderful. And of course, thanks to Craig and Ewan for joining us as well. We'll be back next Tuesday, so we'll see you then.